You come to the right place. Well, you see them practicing their breathing and practicing how to relax and relaxation techniques. So we heard it from Lewis about the word is the in thing. Well, this is also another very in thing today is stress management. And of course, time management is very related to that. So in the beginning, you have two. You have the blue sheet and the yellow one. The blue one, you at the top, gives you an idea of just how you're handling stress right now, and it goes through some of the indicators that you're not handling it very well. The key thing, of course, here is to be honest. Then the second one deals with, are you a workaholic? Just a quick little thing that if you've never figured it out, maybe you can get a label on it. Do you tend to be a workaholic? Are you one? So forth. Then if you turn over to the yellow sheet, this is a test to find out your personality makeup. There are certain personality types that are prone to stress and others that they couldn't get stressed no matter what happens. They just seem to move slow, and they're the type of person that if the house was engulfed in flames, they would just be as calm and cool. Has anyone married anybody like that? They're hard to live with. They just don't get excited. I mean, their pulse rate runs slow. They just, the whole system, and that's just the way you're put together. Others of us, we can get excited and worked up over just about anything. And we wake up stressed and we go to bed stressed. So those are two tests that you can take later on if we have some time here or even when you get home, just to try to get a label on just how is it that God has put you together? What type of personality do you have? Are you prone, easily prone to stress? The pink sheet, we're going to deal with the top part of it, but the bottom part is a list of books. All of the books that are on this list are laying up here under the window, so afterwards you can go up and take a look at them. And take your pen out because I'm going to have you check the books that on this list that are available downstairs in the bookshop. Number one, stress, unstress is there. Overcoming Stress by Jan Markle is there. When I Relax, I Feel Guilty is in the bookstore. And then the last two, How to Get Control of Your Time and Your Life, and Managing Your Time. So if, as you peruse these, or as we talk here and share, you might be interested in just looking here first and getting an idea of what it's about, and if you want to, you can purchase that book. Stress is a killer, and it ruthlessly and relentlessly stalks and pursues its victims. Whoops, kind of tie down here. Okay. This is not an amplification system. We're being taped. Of the 10 leading causes of death in America today, 8 of them are attributed to stress. Experts agree that the average business executive today, be it man or woman, has a 1 in 3 chance of a heart attack before the age of 60. So if you're put yourself in any kind of business executive capacity, you have a 30% chance of dying of a heart attack or getting hit very hard before you're 60. Our age is characterized by fierce competition, busyness, ambition, and aggressiveness. The race is against time and for success. Noise, pollution further complicate our lives. We must take action to protect ourselves from destructive stress. Stress weakens our bodies. It makes us more susceptible to ailments, to tension, to anxiety, and to depression. It's actually stress kind of kicks off a lot of other things. Someone has pointed out that 85% of all of the different types of headaches that you can experience are caused by stress. 85% of them. There was an article last summer in a magazine that I subscribed to called The Toastmasters with this title on it. Are you a walking time bomb? The article went on to say that 1 in 5 Americans is operating under sufficient stress conditions to trigger major heart disease. But we take a group here, and right away we can say that a fifth of us that are sitting here right now are probably operating with enough stress to trigger major heart disease. So it's a national epidemic. There's no question about it. Let's start off by defining what we're talking about. Stress simply is the body's response to any demand that's placed upon it. Anytime a demand is placed on your physical body and you respond to it in some way, this is what we refer to as stress. The body's response to any demand that's placed upon it. Now, all stress is not bad. I mean, we need stress to make life exciting, to rise to a challenge, to be prepared physically for some type of an endeavor. We've all experienced the heart beating fast before a test, or a fresh flow of adrenaline into our system just before we get ready to do something that's going to demand something from us. But we can overdo it. Take a rubber band, for example. A rubber band was designed to be stretched. If it just lays there, it really serves no purpose. It was created to be stretched. And it being stretched and wrapped around something, it serves a purpose. But if you stretch it too far, then it, sooner or later it's going to give. And that's what happens to your body. It can tolerate a certain amount of stress. God designed it. But if it goes over its limits, then you're in trouble. And if it's constantly going over its limits for long periods of time, then it can generate other types of illnesses. There's no question that there's a direct correlation between what goes on in your mind. Stress very often is just something in your thoughts, in the way you're viewing things. And what goes on up here triggers something in your physical body. And then your body begins to respond in various ways. And hence come diseases of one kind and another. There's a very fascinating verse in the book of Proverbs, if you turn there with me, to chapter 14. I personally think it's one of the best verses that I know of anywhere in the Bible that deals with the cause of stress and burnout and any number of things that you'd want to add. Proverbs 14, verse 30. It says, "A tranquil heart is life to the body, but passion is rottenness to the bones." In the Amplified Bible, verse 30 reads thusly, "A calm and undisturbed mind and heart are the life and health of the body." So you see, there's a correlation between what goes on up here and what happens in your body. Emotional stress is today our number one cause of ill health. Some doctors are estimating that upwards of 90% of all physical illness is actually emotionally induced. In fact, they've even come up with a term. It's called EII, emotionally induced illness. And 90% of everything that a doctor examines and looks at and prescribes and so forth really has its cause not in a real physical problem, although it results in a real physical problem, but the cause is not physical. It's emotional or mental. So stress is the body's response to any demand. Burnout is often the result of prolonged stress. But there is a difference, and we'll get to it in a moment. Burnout has been defined as a state of physical or psychological exhaustion that is related to chronic unrelieved pressure. So you start off with stress and you go on for so long, and then stress can then produce a burnout. Now here's the major difference between stress and burnout. Stress really is the overuse of the body. In other words, your body has just expended itself and you're just exhausted. Whereas burnout actually is a disengagement. You actually begin to withdraw and your body just shuts down. Now, instead of being tired or strung out, you just begin to lose interest. You begin to daydream, you begin to withdraw. We're going to get to some symptoms in a moment. But that is the major difference that stress is overuse or exhaustion of the body, whereas the burnout symptoms have more to do with disengagement. In other words, your body just quits and shuts down. Your mind, your abilities just sort of turn off. It's shutting down before it blows up. Let's talk about some characteristics. What signals would you be giving off that you're in trouble or that it's starting to happen to you? It's like a red light on a dashboard. When you see a red light on your dashboard or in any mechanical device or some sort of a mechanism that will give a signal that something is wrong. Maybe you'll hear a buzzer go off or you'll see a light or something will blink. We've got so many electronic devices today. Even now they have refrigerators. If you leave the door open, it talks or makes a buzzing sound or something. Well, what types of signals will your body start giving off when it's under stress? Well, here are a few. Decision-making becomes very difficult. Even minor, simple decisions become extremely hard. It's like you just can't decide. You can't make up your mind. And it's not something that you've had a problem with before. Excessive daydreaming about getting away from it all. Now, obviously, a little of this will be going on in a normal person, but when it begins to increase, when it's more than it usually is, when you find yourself, for some reason you can't explain, just a lot of times just kind of withdrawing from what you're doing and dreaming you were somewhere else or you could get away or just leave the kids or get out of here. And it's happening more and more. Increased use of cigarettes, alcohol, tranquilizers, and uppers. You find yourself relying more and more on outside stimulants, either to quiet yourself down or get yourself going. Your thoughts begin to trail off while you're speaking or writing. You're talking and all of a sudden you just sort of lose track of where you were. Or you're writing and you just all of a sudden find yourself daydreaming or forgetting what you were thinking. Excessive worry about all sorts of things that perhaps you never worried about before. Sudden outbursts of temper and hostility. You just start thinking, what's the matter with me? What's come over me? I've never been this way before. I'm just usually not this way, but I find myself very easily angry, irritated, bursting over silly, insignificant things. Paranoid ideas and mistrust of friends and family begin to become suspicious and begin to doubt and question people's motives. Mistrust. Forgetfulness for appointments, deadlines, and dates. And I think, well, you know, that's nothing new. I usually forget them anyway. But we're talking about something that usually isn't the norm. You usually don't forget, but all of a sudden you find yourself more and more forgetting things and not showing up and overlooking. All these are pointing to the fact that your mind is going through some sort of changes and it's just not up to par, not up to snuff. Frequent spells of brooding and feelings of inadequacy. More than normal. Reversals in usual behavior. I'm usually this way, but all of a sudden, for some strange reason, I find myself acting this way. Now, here's a very important point regarding all of these signals. It's easy for some of us, because of the way we're put together, to see symptoms as obstacles to overcome rather than warnings to be heeded. My dad was this way. When he got sick, to him it was a challenge to see whether he could keep going in spite of the fact that he didn't feel well. But he didn't see his illness as a signal that something was wrong, that he should go to the doctor, that he should do something about it. Now some of us, and you have to identify yourself here, when you find these things happen, you say, well, I've just got to pull myself together. I've just got to, you know, put some more effort into it. So instead of stopping and asking myself, maybe something's wrong. Maybe I need to make some radical changes. We push harder. We fight more. And actually what we're doing is we're digging a deeper hole. We have a fellow right here on the conference grounds a couple of weeks ago. He was up at a cabin here in the mountains and they were out to breakfast. And he had gone over and was standing off to the side. I forget whether they were paying the bill or just coming in. And he said all of a sudden he kind of felt a little faint. So he decided he would sit down. So he sat down, and immediately just keeled over in the restaurant on the floor and turned pale and was gasping for breath, and they immediately called the paramedics. They came out. They thought he was having a heart attack. And they thought, as they looked at him, you know, the condition he was in on the floor, and the man is probably, I'd say, 51, 52, somewhere in there, that it was all over. He looked that bad. They got him oxygen to him. They put him in an ambulance. They rushed him down to a hospital. Ran a whole series of tests on him. Found out he did not have a heart attack. He did not have any serious heart cut off or oxygen or anything like this that would have damaged his heart. What he had, they described as an angina attack, which they said that this, for you, is a warning. You'd better change something. You'd better slow down. You better take a long look at your schedule and everything that you're doing, because next time, it could be the real thing. And the real thing could be a week away. So he considers himself very fortunate, and as he put it, God gave him a warning. But there's no permanent damage. They did a thorough test on him and found out that absolutely nothing has happened. But the same thing that brought on an angina attack are the very same things that bring on a full-blown heart attack. And it's not unusual today. And in fact, you might know people even in their 30s and 40s already have serious heart disease, and some of them have even died in their 30s and 40s of a heart attack. I've even read of people in their late 20s already going in for bypass surgery, triple and quadruple bypass surgery in their late 20s and early 30s. Think, how in the world could this happen? Well, some of it is dietary. But one of the things that they're finding out more and more is that stress in itself, even if everything else is okay, hereditarily speaking, and diet and everything is okay, stress in itself can kill you. It can actually raise your cholesterol level to the place where you get blockage, even though dietarily you're doing okay. So here are some signals to beware of. What about some causes? You say, okay, signals, yeah, I've got more than I can shake a stick at. There's no question in my mind that I'm in trouble. But what is it that causes it? I mean, if you're going to change something, you have to know what it is that's causing it, right? So let's talk for a few moments about some causes. One of the major causes on the job, and stress, of course, on the job is one of the major sources, is a lack of control over what you're doing. That might seem like it's not a big thing. But somehow when you have no ability to decide over anything, no ability to make any decisions, no ability to control your life or where it's going, you feel like you're on a fast roller coaster that's just going, and you're on it and you can't get off. That in itself is a great stress producer, a lack of control over your life. In other words, somebody else is in control. It can be your kids, it can be your husband or your wife, it can be your job, it can be your in-laws, but you just feel like you're in a box. It's fast moving down a track and you just can't do anything about it. That despair, that feeling of helplessness and hopelessness that you have no control over what's happening produces a great deal of stress. The second major cause of stress is your personality makeup. You think, I'm sunk. You know, I can't change my personality. That's true, you can't. But you can plan your life in relationship to your personality. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. See, the human frame is like a machine. Do we have any mechanics or any car enthusiasts here? Okay. Cars or any type of machine have a certain limitation. You can only rev it up so far, and pretty soon something's going to blow. We see it all the time in races. A car can go so far, and then something's going to give because it has its capacity. It has its limits. We're back to the rubber band again. Now, the thing is that each of us have different limits. One person seemingly can just go for hours and months at a time at a horrendous pace, and nothing seems to happen. Yet I try to emulate that and try to go at the same pace as my husband or my wife or somebody I admire or some Christian leader or my pastor. And I find myself just, you know, falling apart at the seams. And I think somehow it's unfair. Why should they be able to accomplish so much in a given day, whereas I get to 4 or 5 in the afternoon and I'm already tired? And the reason is because God has made each one of us differently. Psalm 139 is a great psalm on just the fact that God has uniquely and wonderfully made each one of us. And that's why it's important for each of us as individuals to find out what kind of a makeup has God given me. And that's going to, in some cases, enable me to do things that others cannot do. And in other situations, I'm going to have to move at a slower pace or a tenth less or not have a certain type of a job. Joel seems to flourish in that type of a job, yet you put me in it, you know, and inside of a week, I've got stomach cramps and I find myself waking up in the middle of the night paranoid. And so we need to figure out what kind of personality we have, how God has put us together, and then live our lives accordingly to that personality makeup. Now, there are certain types of jobs that cause stress. Let me tell you what they are. There are types of jobs that have heavy people contact. Social workers, teachers, people that deal with other people's problems have a higher degree of stress attached to them than others. So this might determine what type of work you should have. If you find out, number one, that you are a certain type of a personality and you have limitations, then maybe you ought to think twice about having a job that just demands so much emotional energy from you. Like I say, some people seem to flourish in it and have energy left over. Others of us get tired just thinking about going to work. So jobs with heavy people contact, Christian workers are prime candidates for stress because of all the problems and other people's needs and demands that are constantly being presented to them. Okay, here are a few more things that cause stress. We mentioned your personality type, and that test that you have in your handout is going to help you with that. And related to your personality type is not recognizing and therefore exceeding your limits. You're like, once again, the rubber band. You're not quite sure how far you can be stretched. You might be out here thinking you can go twice as far as that, and maybe you're already well beyond what you're capable of, emotionally and physically and everything else. So you don't want to, neither do you want to be here, do you? Because then it's kind of boring and you're not really challenged. So the key is to find out where your limits are, to find out how far you can go where you feel fulfilled and challenged, because to be over-challenged and be exhausted and stressed all the time can be just as bad a problem as being under-challenged, where your job is a bore and you're just doing the same things over and over again. Somehow you want to find the balance of going as far as you can where you feel challenged and where all of your abilities are being used, but not so far that you've gone over your limit and you're just living on adrenaline and gas fumes, where the slightest thing is just going to tip you off and you're going to be laid up in some capacity. So personality type, not recognizing and therefore exceeding your limits. Another one is unrealistic expectations. You have expectations about what you ought to be able to accomplish or achieve. Or perhaps somebody else, oh, they're all playing down, they're heading up, it'll be over in a minute, they're heading up to practice. Except they have all the windows up there closed. There's a little statement in a book I read not long ago. It's called Tyranny of the Urgent. Anybody ever read that? A little booklet? Quite a few of you have. There's a little statement in that book. It goes this way. Driven on to the reef of frustration by other people's demands. Well, who are the people that demand something of us? Any suggestions?
Yourself.
Okay, yourself would be number one. You put these demands. Why would we put demands on ourselves that are more than we can actually achieve? What would cause us to do that? Okay, we want to be a better Christian. Like, well, if I did more, I'd be a better Christian. Okay, any other reason?
Pride.
Pardon me?
I was just going to say low self-esteem.
Okay, low self-esteem. We're trying to get our self-esteem from accomplishment and being productive, so we keep demanding more and more of ourselves. Who are some of the other people besides ourselves that would put demands on us?
Your spouse.
Your spouse?
Children.
Well, I'll tell you who I think are the prime candidates besides yourself of putting that demand on you. And the interesting thing about it is sometimes they really haven't at all put that demand on you, but we think they have. Who am I talking about?
Parents.
Your parents. You might be under the impression that if I'm really going to be a successful Christian, then I've got to accomplish what my dad accomplished. Or I've got to be like my mother because she was such a wonderful Christian. If I'm really going to be a success at living the Christian life, then I need to live the kind of life that my mother lived. Now, mother might not have ever said that to you, but somehow, verbally or non-verbally or even intuitively, you've come to the conclusion that you need to be like your mother or you need to be like your father. And so you actually put the demands on it, but you think that you're doing it because they expect you to be something or to accomplish something. And I'm sure you yourself, or you've run into people that have been years struggling with this whole concept of what my parents really are expecting me. And in some cases, they've come right out and said it, that you need to be this or you need to be that. I have a very good friend of mine. He's 36 years old, lives down in San Diego. About 2 years ago, he had a total, complete emotional nervous breakdown. I mean, he just was all through. He couldn't do anything. The slightest little thing, making a phone call, trying to decide what he was going to have for dinner, just made him so ill he had to go back to bed. He was that shot. And we spent many hours talking and crying together. When I'm still in correspondence, he calls every once in a while to let me know how he's doing. He gets these attacks. I forget the word he uses for them, where all of a sudden he can't breathe. He's gasping for breath. It's almost like he's going to die from lack of oxygen. They're all produced by what he's thinking about in his mind. All of his problems started when he began to feel that he needed to be an example for his younger brothers and sisters. He's Oriental, and there's a great deal of pressure on Orientals to not lose face and to uphold the family tradition and so forth. His father was a tremendous success. Father had long since died, but he felt somehow he needed to take over his father's mantle and set an example for the rest of his family. So he had this in the back of his mind that he was going to exceed the accomplishments of his father. Well, by the age of 35 or 36, he was just about done in. He had to resign his job. He had a very responsible job. He had to resign it. He's been under therapeutic care for almost 2 years now. And just now he's beginning to come out of it. So once again, we have this idea of the pressure of parents. Unrealistic expectations. Another one is inflated ego needs. And it's related to self-image, that I need to accomplish something, I need to do a certain number of things to satisfy my own ego of what I expect or what I think someone else might be expecting. We can sum up some of these things under what we might call internal and external causes. Under the internal, we'll have such things as a high need for approval. I mean, you have an insatiable appetite for being approved or well thought of, and that pushes you and drives you to accomplish more and more and go beyond your limits. Internal also is a workaholic mentality. You've got a little test on that. There's a book up here if you want to look at it. If anyone's ever accused you of being a workaholic, whether it be your kids or your parents or your spouse, maybe there's a good chance that it's true. You might want to find out what is it that characterizes a workaholic and what you can do about it. A non-assertive, passive type of a personality can often produce stress because you don't say anything about what you like or don't like. You just go along with it. You know, you don't want to rock the boat. You don't want to argue. So you just, when anybody asks you, you're always saying yes, 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 sir, yes, sir. Three bags full. I'll be glad to do it. I'll be glad to help you. And you keep saying yes, 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 and you extend yourself further and further out because your personality type is a passive that doesn't like to say no or disappoint anybody or incur anyone's wrath. And I see people nodding and pointing at their spouses. And another internal cause is what we refer to as the Messiah complex. And that is that you single-handedly are going to try to save the whole world. Lauren Sandy, the president of the Navigators, years ago came up with a statement. He said, it was a wonderful feeling when I finally resigned as master of the universe. But seriously, there are those types of individuals who feel that they've got to do everything. If it's going to be done, I've got to do it. And anytime there's anything to volunteer for or do, they're always right up there in front. And they go well over their limits. It's just a matter of time until the body says, you can keep going if you want, but I quit. And there's not much you can do without your body. What about external? These are more practical. The others are more unseen type things. External causes long hours with no let up. My friend John, whom I mentioned, he was working 7 days a week, 16 to 18 hours a day when he finally collapsed. I mean, all he basically did was go to work, and he drove 50 miles one way to go to work. So he'd leave early in the morning, drive to work, work all day, drive home, get home at, say, 8, 9 o'clock at night, go to bed, get up in the morning at 6 o'clock again, drive 50 miles down to work. And he was working at this for weeks on end, 7 days a week. It's no wonder his body finally said, I quit. Long hours with no let up. Number two, no help. There's just no help. You have got to do it all yourself. It could be your job, it could be in your home, where you just feel that it all hangs on you. Too many changes. Just one thing after another. There's a fellow, I'm just trying to think a second now, who wrote a book, Future Shock, where he came up with this little formula. He assigned a point system to major changes, like a death in the family, a change of a job, a new baby, moving to a new location. And he had you go through a little test where you gave a point allowance to each of these changes. Had they taken place in your life in the last X number of months? And then you total all the points up, and then he would tell you about what you could expect was going to happen physically, depending on how many points you had. Well, some changes we don't have any control over, do we? They just happen. But there are other changes that we actually initiate. We decide that we're going to do this or do that, and we create a change. The key is don't create too many major changes too close together, because they just begin to compound the stress. If you have any say-so about it, if you've had two or three major changes that don't complicate it by deciding you're going to sell your house, switch jobs, and move to another city, or adopt a child, or, I mean, just start adding on. Try to space them out so you don't have a lot of them coming all at the same time. And the last one under external causes would be lack of family and free time. Just doesn't seem to be any time to spend with your family or time to yourself. Well, we've talked about characteristics, we've talked about causes, and now we're going to get to the part that everybody wants to hear about. What are some of the cures? That's why if you can identify with, I can see how these things have caused, and I'm guilty, I admit it, because of the what I'm doing and the hours I'm working and the type of job. What can we do? Okay, number one is to test your own limits to decide if you're a racehorse type or a turtle. How many of you already, without even having taken a test, there's no question about it, I know I'm a racehorse type. Put up your hand. Okay, so some of you already got it identified. How many are turtles? There's a couple. Now, we're not saying that the turtles don't need to manage their time also, but there's a different reason. A turtle needs to manage his time because he or she moves so slow that they hardly ever get anything done. So what the turtle wants to do is put a little gas in their tank and learn how to move a little faster. But now the racehorse is at the other end. He's always lathered up, panting, looking for the water bucket. And the racehorse needs to learn how to slow down so he lives long enough to get something done. So the turtle needs to speed up to get more done. The racehorse needs to slow down so he lives long enough to get something done. And those tests will help you. Test your limits to decide if you're a racehorse or a turtle, and then learn how to structure your life accordingly. The biggest mistake you can make is to assume that you're a turtle when you really are a racehorse. Number two, adapt or adopt a biblical attitude toward work and leisure. One book that will really help you with that is this book up here entitled When I Relax, I Feel Guilty. In our society, where there's so much emphasis put on production and really accomplishing things, I mean, we can hardly even go to the bathroom without feeling we've got to have a tape on or some books or something. I mean, why waste your time just sitting there? And I've been in bathrooms, you know, where it looked like it was a library. So we've always got to be doing something rather than just, because we somehow, in our society, and I think Christians are guilty of this also, feeling that just to sit down in a chair and not do anything is a waste of time. And that is a false biblical view of relaxation. It's almost like it's wrong to relax, to do nothing. And I think a lot of us, especially racehorses, really need to learn how to do nothing and enjoy it. And I really speak to myself because I'm a racehorse of the first caliber. Number two is to adopt a biblical attitude toward work and leisure. Now, where we get off is, of course, we assume that work is everything. I mean, work is what gives me my identity. Work is what it is that gives me my joy. It provides for my family. I love to work. And then you probably need to read the book on workaholics. But in a workaholic's mentality, there's no room for leisure because it's just a waste of time. I asked a fellow one time what his hobbies were, and he said work was his hobby. He said, well, some people like to do this and some people like to do that, and I just like to work. And that's, I enjoy it and it relaxes me and so forth. And but the friend that I'm speaking about, I would be very surprised if he lived to see 45. He's already got a pacemaker, and I don't think he's 40 yet. Because he's talked himself into believing that he's all right, that his whole attitude and his outlook is all right. But he's the only one that feels that way. All of his friends have been trying to tell him for years to get some hobbies, to learn how to slow down so he can enjoy life. He doesn't really enjoy life. He's in some kind of a treadmill thinking that work in the marketplace is his whole life, and that's what he's done. So adopting a biblical attitude toward work and leisure. Another one is allowing time for recreation, for exercise, for relaxation, for good nutrition, and times alone with the Lord. We have to take time for these things. Actually plant it into the fabric of our lives to relax. Every once in a while you'll hear somebody make the statement and they're actually bragging about it. I haven't taken a vacation in 10 years or 8 years or whatever. Like they were proud of it. When really we ought to be ashamed that we don't take a vacation. What's a waste of time? You know, like I'm sitting out there looking at the flowers and doing nothing when I could be back, you know, really being productive and so forth and so on. That's the workaholic mentality again. The false biblical concept of work and leisure. We already mentioned don't have too many change factors close together. That's another cure, is as much as it lies within you to space them out and not make major changes if you've already had enough. Gain more control of your life and your decisions. Try to arrange things so that you have more say-so over what you do or you don't do. Now, if in your job it's generating a lot of stress, then talk to your boss. Try to rearrange something. Get a different kind of a job description, a little more freedom to have some say-so over about what you do. It might never have occurred to you that that's a source of stress. But there's no question from everything I've read that it is. We just kind of go along with it. But inside, we can be boiling and fuming that everything is programmed and everyone tells me exactly what to do every hour of the day, and it just seems like I'm just a robot. And that produces stress. Here's a very important one. Keep your personal relationships in good order. Especially watch out for bitterness, resentment, and anger. A calm and undisturbed mind and heart are the life and health of the body. Proverbs 14:30, in the last part says, but envy, jealousy, and wrath are as rottenness of the bones. Envy, jealousy, wrath, bitterness, resentment. We carry these feelings around that so-and-so has done me wrong. They have done this to me and I become bitter, I become resentful. You know who pays the price? It's not the person you're angry with. I pay the price. I pay it in ulcers. I pay it in high blood pressure. We have known people who in a fit of anger have incurred a major heart attack. They have gotten so boiled and so worked up inside that their heart has just quit. We know fear can produce heart attacks. A person can be literally scared to death. I read recently about a woman an older woman, and somebody broke into her house to burglarize her, and she was so frightened by the whole event that she died of a heart attack, and they're actually taking the man through the court system now on murder charges. That by him breaking into this woman's house and frightening her so much that she actually sustained a heart attack and died because of fear. And the fear that's attached to personal relationships, the fear of retribution, all of these things. There's just so much in the scriptures about our personal relationships. Let me just share one with you in Romans 14. So then let us pursue the things which make for peace and the building up of one another. I've got a reversed version of that. It goes like this. So then let us pursue the things which make for war and the tearing down of one another. I have to ask myself, the decisions I make, the way I relate to people, are they producing war and tearing people down? Or are they producing peace and building people up? Someone might have to help me on this one. There's a verse, and I think it's in the book of Romans, that says, as much as lies within you, live peaceably with all men. Anyone know where that is? Recognize it? Pardon me? Okay, I'm looking here. Verse 18. 12:18, thank you. If possible, as far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Now, it does depend on me. If I'm the one who's going to be angry with somebody, if I'm the one who's going to say, well, I'll forget it, but I won't forgive it. Or I'll forgive it, but I won't forget it. Is there such a thing as saying, I forgive, but I won't forget? You're really saying, I'm not going to forgive you. And I've actually had people come right out and say, I will never forgive so-and-so for that. Well, so-and-so is not going to be the one who's going to suffer. I can harbor that resentment and that bitterness in my heart. I'm the one that's going to pay the price. So watch out in our personal relationships, especially anger, bitterness, resentment. The next one is get the proper amount of rest. My boss here, Bob Dennis, who's been the MC, has a saying that I've already used a couple of times and I enjoy it. He says, I'm burning the candle at both ends and praying for more wax. Well, the fact is that we're not going to get any more wax. We've got all the wax we're going to get, and if we burn it at both ends, we're going to be in trouble. Now, most of us probably don't sleep too much. I think the trend today is that we sleep too little. We always feel guilty that we're in bed. We've got to get up. We've got to get with it. You know, I mean, so-and-so's on the television at 6 o'clock with the exercise, and we're fellowshipping late at night. But you can only keep that up so long, and something is going to give. Find out how much sleep you really need, how much your body really, and there's no secret formula. I don't know how many dozens of articles I've read on sleep to try to come up with a formula, but there just doesn't seem to be any. People will say, well, everybody needs about 7 hours, don't know what they're talking about. Some people really do need more, and some people can get by on much less. But figure out what it is. The way to figure it out is to allow yourself to a period of time, maybe on a vacation or something, where you go to bed at a given hour and don't set any alarm, and just see, of course, that is if you don't get waken up by a wild animal, your kids, or something else. Just see how long you would naturally sleep and wake up and feel refreshed that you can go through the day without a nap. And then what you can do is you can slowly begin to try to cut back a little bit. And you stop to the place where you realize that during the day you're kind of half asleep and half awake most of the time. Try to figure out where it is. Now, I'm told, maybe some of you older people here can help me, that when you get a little older, you actually can get by on less. Is that true? Anyone found that to be true? No? Well, there's one more fable that we can discard. But figure out what you need. Don't cheat yourself. Your body will not go on forever. Now, one of the secrets that I try to adopt is to try to keep up to date most of the time. And then when you hit a crisis where actually the demand is placed on you, that you have to go 2 or 3 nights with a little less, you can get by on it. But if you're already living at the ragged edge and you hit a period of a week where there's a crisis going on, or you have an illness, or you're up all night with a child, then there's just absolutely zero left. So the thing is to live with a margin. Maybe even, you know, go just a little bit over what you normally need so that when that crisis hits and when the demand is placed on you, you've got something left. It's like running a race. Do we have any runners in here? Any joggers? The key to running is to always hold a little bit back. That's why those runners, when they get down to the end, are able to all of a sudden cut loose and really sprint, sometimes for the last couple of miles. Whereas Joe Schmidt over here, who doesn't have that much experience, he gives it everything he's got in the beginning, and about the middle of the race, he's ready to die. But experience tells you that if you have a little bit in reserve, when your body is under a situation where you need to demand more of it, there's something that's there to give. Because the fact is that life is a marathon, not a 100-yard dash. And we can't live our lives as if we only had 100 yards to run, because we've got a lot more than that. So adjust it to the place where you always have a little bit in reserve, so when you hit that crisis, there's something to fetch up. Learn to be flexible. That's a great stress producer, that you fight everything. Every time something changes, every time something's going to go differently, you fight it rather than cooperate. Learning to be flexible. The last one I have down here is just learn to slow down. Walk slower, talk slower, eat slower. That's a hard one. And it just takes a discipline to just learn how to slow down, kind of meander a little bit. And some of us, and once again I say I have to include myself, we just tend to go pell-mell in everything we do. We eat fast, and sometimes my wife says, you don't eat, you just inhale. The tendency is to do everything fast, to talk fast, to eat fast, to work fast. And your body just is revving up at high speed all the time, and pretty soon, you know, a gasket blows or a bolt drops out or you sustain an oil leak and you're in trouble. See life as a relay race and not as a rat race. See life as a relay race and not a rat race. What's the difference? A rat race, no clear sense of purpose or direction, no sense of cooperation, support, or caring. It's just one rat charging through the maze. A relay race, clearly communicated direction, a prescribed course, a sense of team spirit and cooperation. Okay, now what I want to do is throw it open for questions. We're through. Don't panic now. Walk slow. We're going to throw it open for some questions. And then I'd like to, because it's a tendency that you might not do this until you get home, I'd like to spend the last few minutes having you work through these two tests just to see where you come out. But let me just field some questions. Anything we've said? There are a lot of different relaxation techniques. I mean, you can take a psychology course and they'll teach you one. If you read any success books or success motivational tapes, they'll teach you some sort of... One of the simplest ones, and one that seems to work for a lot of people, is just breathing. Just making your breathing that you're conscious of it. Taking a deep breath and just holding it. And blowing it out slowly until it's all out. And in your mind, counting, you know, one, two, three, and holding it. And now some people go through the thing of that they go from toe to head. They'll start with their toes and relax their toes, and then they'll visually think of their ankles and then their knees, and they move all the way up to the top. And when you get to the top, you're supposed to be dead asleep. But, you know, to mention one over others, there are just so many of them. And in some of these books, they'll mention, you can just look in the, I'm just trying to think of which one, Stress Unstressed probably has something in there. But everyone needs some type of a thing that you, when you feel that tension, and you realize, oh boy, I'm just so uptight. For instance, I have a signal that my body gives off. It's invariably very accurate, and that is that the muscles right down through here get very tight. I can feel it in my chest. It's not angina. It's not a heart attack, because I've learned to distinguish it. But what is happening is that the muscles in my esophagus tube are starting to restrict or contract. And I find it hard to swallow. I find it hard to eat. And I just feel just a real pressure right in my chest. Other people get upset stomachs. Other people get migraines. There are just certain things that you can look for that are very indicative of you, and you realize, I'm probably worried about something, I'm probably uptight. And one of the things that helps, of course, is just stopping and sitting down, and you can meditate on verses, you can just start praying, but you need to probably just stop what you're doing and do something else. Now, one thing might work for one person, and it might not work for another. That's why it's hard to suggest a specific, but there are a number of them around. Good point. Everyone catch that? You want to say it again?
I don't know if I can.
They worship their work.
They worship their play.
Work at their play.
And play at
their worship. Good. I think that's very accurate. Okay. Any other questions? My comment would be, it's wrong to burn out, and it's wrong to rust out. What you want to do is live out. I mean, that's once again, I think, just a cop-out for being a workaholic and trying to justify it. You don't have to burn out or rust out. You can just live out your life. Yeah, well, that is an option, you know. If you realize that you're in a catch-22 situation where your job is just killing you, then it might be worthwhile to think about a different job or a change in your job or a different job description, and have a talk with your employer to find out what you can do to change it. Okay.
What are some things that you can do to slow us down? You know, changing jobs just...
In other words, you say whatever you do, you're going to probably attack it the same way. Weren't you just talking about an attitude toward work, or that everything has to be perfect? If you realize that you are a perfectionist, you might just want to just take a good look at that whole thing about being perfect in everything or trying to do a perfect job. There's an article, in fact, I have it in the file here, and the whole thing deals with perfectionism and how it destroys. There's a difference between doing a good job or doing an excellent job on something as opposed to doing a perfect job. And perfectionists, of course, as anyone knows, are very difficult people to live with. It just takes a great deal of discipline to... I think it must start somehow in a mental attitude that it's wrong somehow to try to do everything perfectly. There's some reason why I'm doing that. Maybe my dad or mom put demands on me that everything had to be perfect, and so I'm still trying somehow to live up to their expectations of doing it. Maybe I think that God will love me more if I do it perfectly. So the problem is trying to explore the fallacy behind it. What is it that causes me? You might have to talk to somebody or just analyze it yourself. But then you might want to just do some reading on it, you know, or do a Bible study on just the difference between doing something well or doing it the best you can as opposed to doing it perfectly. So there's no way you can do anything consistently perfectly because we're human and we're going to make mistakes, we're going to make errors, and we can be too tough on ourselves. Anyone else that's struggled with that, want to give him some advice? Yeah, that's a good book. That's a very good book to read. It deals with this whole rat race and rushing pell-mell through life and Ordering Your Private World by Gordon MacDonald. That's also available in the bookstore. Ordering Your Private World, Gordon MacDonald. Okay, any more questions? There's one over here. It's very much wrapped up in self-image or your self-worth.
And it gets in the way with my relationship with God.
Right.
And so Paul, I really appreciate it.
Good. The last sheet, I neglected to mention the green sheet. That's just some practical helps on planning, do lists, organizing your time. But turn to the pink sheet for a minute. I'm going to very quickly go through those 10 because they're really not explained. And then you can figure out which of them apply to you and what you can do about it. Number one, scheduling packed too tightly. That's just simply you're just trying to do too much. Number two, fuzzy goals. You really don't have any idea where you're going. There's a just certain amount of frustration that you're busy, 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 but you don't sense that you're really going anywhere. What do you really want to accomplish? Where do you want to be? Where are you headed? Number three is the inability to say no. Four is procrastination, that you just keep putting things off and they keep mounting up. You just somehow are afraid to make a decision for fear of making the wrong one, so you make nothing. And you just more and more seem like you're getting piled under with things that people are waiting for you to decide, but you can't do it. Number five, failure to delegate. Number six, not setting deadlines, so you really haven't figured out when you want to accomplish something, so it seems to take you forever to get it done. Number seven, underestimating how long something takes. So you're always late or always seem to be running behind, the proverbial running around honking at your own tail light, as someone has put it. There's some people who seem to forever show up late and get everything done late, and the thing is they've just never sat down and figured out approximately how long is something going to take, and they always guess wrong. They think it's going to take this amount of time. My theory is that generally speaking, things always take longer than you think. If you just operate on that, but if you think it's going to take you 20 minutes, allow half an hour. If you think it's going to take an hour, you better give yourself an hour 15. Invariably, people do just the opposite. They think it's going to take an hour, so they try to get it done in 45, and so they move faster, and then they find themselves behind, so they get angry, and things just start snowballing. Number eight, not allowing time for planning. Not just sitting down and figuring out, what do I want to do this week? What's realistic? You come in and the pile's there, so you just kind of charge into it, you know, flapping and flailing away, and hope that somehow you can get as much done as quickly as possible. But the problem with that is that you're not really sure you're doing the right things. So no matter what you're doing, there's this mild frustration that although you're working away at the pile, you wonder, And you look around, there are 8 more piles. How do I know if I'm really working on the right pile? And while you're working on one, your emotional energy is being drained, thinking and wondering whether you're doing the right thing. So one way to alleviate that is to sit down and think through before you attack, not concentrating on one thing at a time. Number 9. Number 10 is related to procrastination. That's not making prompt decisions. Let's take a minute or so right now. You might have identified immediately with one of these 10. Just write down the number below. Isolate one or two items that hinder you, and don't pull all 10 down. You'll get a heart attack just thinking about it. But to pick one or two that you can actually do something about, that you can make a change in the way you go about things. Okay, let's take some, any more questions. If not, then I'll turn you loose on the test, and I'll be around. If you want to come up and ask a personal question, feel free to do that.